So we love having Charles Davis on to talk the NFL on Fox, the NFL Network. That's the one and only Charles Davis. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. You had the Niners and the Dolphins, and I didn't get a chance to watch much of that game, but I got to tell you one thing that really impressed me, and I wanted to get your take, is the Miami Dolphins and some of the momentum that they have. But I'm looking at that offensive line that was so depleted. Didn't they have three guys out, the whole left side?
The whole left side.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Ryan Tannehill, and I'm like, wow, okay, is this the same Ryan Tannehill that I'm thinking I know? I was really impressed at how he played that game without that offensive line intact.
Yeah, I think we were too, and it's a team that's transformed its identity because they went from all of us saying, when is Ryan Tannehill going to become that quarterback to justify where he got picked in the draft? I think he was a number 8 pick the year he came out, and in my rankings, not that they matter a whole lot, I was much more comfortable if you were going to take him in the first round, that you take him between 25 and 32. That's just me, okay? Mm-hmm. But quarterback numbers, quarterbacks get inflated because of the need. So I understood why he went as high as he did, and we've been waiting. But here's the other thing that I don't know if we illuminated it well enough on our broadcast. We did mention he's had 4 offensive coordinators in 5 years. So
yeah, whoa.
You're not going to get better. Continuity is key to everything for quarterbacks. Brady's been with Belichick the whole time, and Josh McDaniels, you get the whole idea. We can go chapter and verse. But what they did in this game, used to being a running team now with Jay Ajayi, the 3 offensive linemen left tackle, left guard, Pro Bowl center, all out. He adjusted it because it turned out they're probably better throwing the ball with those 3 than trying to run it. And that's how they adjusted, and Ryan Tannehill adjusted as well. And they were up 31-14. It became a game late, and give Kaepernick and San Francisco credit for hanging with it. But they were up 31-14. Not that it was a clean game, don't get me wrong, but he played a nice game.
Yeah, Charles, you're talking about quarterbacks and ranking them. So just since you're doing that, I want your take on this. Winston or Mariota? Huh? Come on, buddy. I mean, both of these guys, I mean, you're watching them, and they seem to be growing. Winston goes and he beats my Seahawks. He went the Arrowhead in one, and Mariota is doing, you know, he's in the AFC South is not that good. But the point is, they're in second place. What are you seeing there between those two if you had to pick?
Okay, I'll give you a couple things first, then I'll tell you who I'll take. Deal?
Yes.
Coming out of college, they were the 1 and 2 quarterbacks, depending on how you wanted to look at them in order. Right. I ranked them Winston 1, Mariota 2.
Okay.
The reason I did that was Winston, his dialogue in college was pro. Mm. His style in college was pro. He was under center all the time. You get the idea.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That gave him the advantage as far as I was concerned because I thought he'd be able to acclimate quicker. Grant, I tell you, I've been a Mariota fan forever.
Okay.
Okay. My praise on Mariota is he's not just the guy that I'd love for my daughter to marry, which is standard praise from a father about another guy, right?
Right.
Means,
yeah.
Wow,
right.
He's cool. My praise on him is I'd like for him to be my son.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that tells you where I am with him.
Gotcha.
Now, when they both came out of school, the typical thing is if you draft quarterbacks 1 and 2 or the top 2 quarterbacks in your draft, typically, in a general sense, one has a pretty decent career, if not spectacular, and the other one does not.
Right.
You get a 50-50 shot. I said when they both got drafted, this was going to break that chain. They both were going to go to the Pro Bowl, and they both were going to be all pros in the future, and I see no reason to change that. None at all. They're both playing really, really top level.
Yeah.
I'd still take Winston right now a little bit over Mariota, and it kills me to say that because you know how I feel about Mariota.
Right.
But the reason I would take him is, again, his effect on teams is almost palpable.
Yeah.
Okay, you go back. I heard Gerald McCoy, their defensive tackle, the Pro Bowl guy, talk about it this week. He said 3 weeks ago when we kind of were at that crossroads, Winston called us all up as a team and said, look, I want everyone to go home tonight and remember why we play this game.
Woo.
Remember when you played the game just purely for the love of the game. Remember when it was just about playing ball, that wasn't about checks and all that other stuff. Because this is about winning now, and this is where we are, and we need to start winning some games. And they've won 3 straight since then.
Goosebumps.
This kid has an innate sense of doing that and pulling a team together. that I'm not saying Mariota does not have it. He does, but it's an entirely different way.
Right.
I mean, Marcus is a very quiet guy. Burns with competitiveness, though. Don't let his quietness fool you when it comes to trying to win games, okay? That old, he cut the heart out of his own mom to win that, to score that touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Mariota would tell you that he wouldn't do that while doing it. Does that make sense?
No, yeah. Totally.
Jameis would smile and go, beautiful. Well, you know, I love my mom, but yeah, she's got to go. Marcus would say, oh, I'd never do that. And the whole time he'd have a surgery team prepped, waiting. So
else.
It's a different way of doing it. I still have Winston a little bit ahead of Marcus because, again, playing out of the pocket, playing that type of style, he's still a little bit more advanced. But if you watch Marcus over the last 5 weeks, he's improved by leaps and bounds as far as I'm concerned. And when it comes to running the ball, there's not even a fair comparison. Winston is a decent athlete who knows how to move and slide and make some people miss in the pocket. Mariota move and slide and make you miss and take it 60 on you.
Yeah. We're talking with Charles Davis. You know, when you were on with us last week, we were talking about the Lions, and this was obviously before their, again, come-from-behind victory against Minnesota. So now that's 11 times they've trailed in the fourth quarter, and they've won seven. And you said, well, you know, that's not a great recipe for success, that eventually that's going to come up and bite you. And, you know, I'm wondering if we can use the same narrative with the Raiders, who once again, okay, had a Derek Carr fourth-quarter comeback in a game in which they probably should not have won, but they did. You could make the same case that they were outplayed in Mexico City against Houston, but in the fourth quarter found a way to win. Are they similar in any way, the Lions and the Raiders, with how they're winning?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Grant, because they are extremely similar, but they're viewed with a different lens. And here's why, in my humble opinion. The Lions have been a punchline for a long time, longer than the Raiders.
No question.
The Raiders have been one, like, I told my kid just the other day, you know my son Parker,
sure.
He's 19 now, right? I was like, Park, you wouldn't believe the Raiders back in their day. And he's like, when was that? Because in his lifetime, the Raiders haven't been relevant.
Right.
He had no idea that the Raiders were the baddest team going, that you hid the women and children when the Raiders came in. Like, what?
Right.
And so I had to teach him all of that. Back to your point, different lenses, though, and here's where I think the lenses are different. Jack Del Rio is a former Pro Bowl linebacker who carries himself still like a Pro Bowl linebacker while as a head coach. And week one, he made that decision to go for two, and he hasn't looked back since. And they continue to do things like that. They take those gambles. They do it all. But people kind of expect that because it's Jack Del Rio. You know, Jack walks into a press conference, and everybody's like, man, he's about to tackle somebody.
Yeah, it's his personality. Yeah.
Flip it over to Jim Caldwell. Jim Caldwell, at the time we were doing all those games, he'd become Mr. Riverboat Gambler on fourth downs and had gone 5 for 5, 6 for 6 during our time frame, but never gets the same credit for it because Jim carries himself like he's a deacon in your Sunday service. It's a different prism, and that's why people look at it and we go, well, with the Lions, we don't know if that's sustainable. With the Raiders, boy, that's the way the Raiders do it. Mm-hmm. And I think your point is well taken. They're both in the same type of a track, and I'm not sure that the Lions aren't, you know, the Lions and Raiders on an equal day wouldn't give you one heck of a game. But they are viewed differently, and I think a lot of it is through the head coaches and their personalities. Now, I still say being behind in the fourth quarter in most of your games is not a sustainable recipe for
right.
winning a championship. But I also have to remember winning those close games also galvanizes a team and makes them a tough out because they never lose confidence late in the game. They're always like, we'll find a way to win it because they get used to that, and give them both credit for doing that.
Well, you know, Charles, when this is a question that Grant, I'm sure, can answer, but I want your take on it because you talk about the G-men, the Giants. I want to know, in your humble opinion, are they contenders? Because I say 9 punts. They're the only, last week, 9 punts, less than 300 yards. They've had trouble running the ball. The defense and JPP is real, and they're the only team to beat the Cowboys. But are they real?
I think they're real, Doug, for this reason. The second part that you cited, that defense,
mm-hmm.
and we have historical evidence of the Giants organization, that when the defense and guys are getting after the passer, I'm not as worried about their overall record if they get to the playoffs. They get to the playoffs, and then the recipes for the playoffs come into play. Just like, let's just use your sport. When we get to the playoffs, it's a different game, isn't it, brother?
Yes, it is. Totally.
Okay, and I'm asking you, because you lived it, you played it, you did it. Grant has seen it for all these years. I'm on the outside. I'm the outsider saying playoff basketball is different. The game's a little bit slower. People have scouted you to within an inch of your life.
Yep.
You have to make extra adjustments on the fly because all the stuff you did during the regular season, they know the play call, right? They know the switches. You got to put in extra counters, all those things. So what's going to sustain you in playoff basketball? I'm going to guess what you do on the defensive end is going to do it.
Yes, sir.
Because every possession is so huge. Well, flip it over to playoff football. Every possession's huge. All those fast breakneck teams aren't playing as fast now because it slows down because you feel like every call is critical. The coach is calling the plays in, take a little bit of extra time because every play means something.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Giants can rush the passer, as they're starting to demonstrate again, that makes them real and legitimate.
Wow.
And that's what you look for come playoff football. I understand, you know, the yardage, the this, the that. I get it all. I would be more comfortable with the Giants if they ran the ball better, because I'm not crazy about what their run game is. But when I saw Jason Pierre-Paul play to that level again,
oof.
Olivier Vernon, people were talking about, have you seen him play lately? You see it's starting to build.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's starting to happen. And when that happens, look out, because in the East, I thought it was going to be a slugfest between the Giants, Eagles, and Washington for that second playoff spot. I've got the Eagles this week. They've fallen off the pace.
Yeah. Yep.
So now we're down to the Giants and Washington chasing Dallas. And I don't think either one of them is truly concerned about winning the division. Go ahead. You've sprinted out there. We
yep.
got it. But let us get into that second position. Let us get into the playoffs. And then let us take our shot yep. at you then.
Yeah.
That's what those teams are trying
well,
to do.
Well, I'll tell you something else for the Giants. And in week one, they beat Dallas. But the Dallas team now is completely different. I think we get
different
that.
Team.
In week two, Eli Manning lost a very valuable player on that offense, Shane Vereen, and they're
yep.
expecting Shane Vereen to come back next week for the Dallas game.
Oh.
And I want to tell you something. The offense has struggled mainly because the offensive line, their run blocking is pathetic, and they just have not been able to run the ball the entire year, and they're obviously without Justin Pugh right now, their best offensive lineman. But if Shane Vereen, Charles, can come back and be the Shane Vereen, that is a added weapon for this offense because you know how effective he is in that passing game coming out of the backfield.
He's a space eater.
Yep.
And you get him out into that space now, and you have to account for him. And so that takes another person away from shading towards Odell Beckham, right? Takes another guy out of the gap in case you want to run the football. If you get Shane Vereen out and outside and maybe put someone else back there, a whole bunch of different things. But I also say this. Watching Eli Manning play quarterback now, Doug.
Yeah.
You're watching a pure veteran now play quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
You're not watching young Eli play anymore, okay? Mm-hmm. Forget chronological and everything. He has really come into his own as an NFL quarterback because that term managing the game, which we use to damn people with faint praise, is one of the most overused and incorrect phrases about whether we praise or disparage a quarterback. Again, my opinion, because the best quarterbacks that have ever walked the face of the earth are the best game managers. They're the ones who run the game.
Boy,
they're
isn't
the
ones
that
the who
truth? Run situations. They're the ones who speed up a team, slow down a team, change your tempos, make the throws you need to make, take the sack when you have to so you don't throw it in an interception, punt the ball, which isn't always a bad thing. Game managers? Brady's a game manager. Peyton was a game manager. Drew Brees is a game manager. The best ones were game managers. We've turned it into such a phrase like, oh, well, he just can't do anything. And I understand why, but I'm just telling you guys, the best quarterbacks I've ever played were the best game. You tell me Johnny Unitas wasn't a game manager?
Boy, no kidding. You're spot on. These guys used to call their own plays and everything.
Yeah, they called Otto Graham.
Right.
You know, all those guys were game managers and took it and made sure the team went at the tempo that they established. And the defense danced to their tune. Those were game managers.
That is, man. And you see 200 games for Tom Brady out of 500 wins, man.
Crazy.
Is that just amazing?
It's crazy. And, Doug, think of it this way, too. The best NBA teams we've ever seen over time, same head coach, Usually a point guard that was connected with that head coach in so many ways. Obviously, you had to have plenty of other players. But if we equate it basketball to football, Magic and Riley.
Yep.
Okay. Red Auerbach and Bob Cousy.
Yep.
Okay. Pick your ones, right? Just go right on down the
Duncan
line.
Duncan and Pop.
Okay. Pop and Tony. Pick them down the line. Now go to the NFL. The best ones in history. Brady and Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton and Breeze. Manning and Tony Dungy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
The connection. Now, yeah, did they have offense coordinators? I get all that. I'm talking about that head coach. The head coach has to be involved with his quarterback, has to have a connection with him. Bart Starr and Vince Lombardi. I mean, just go right on down the line. Heck, the Giants didn't get over the hump, as Grant will tell you, during that Packers dynasty. But Allie Sherman and Y.A. Tittle were a pretty good connection.
Oh, boy, were they ever.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, everybody wants to get on the – listen, they played for three championships in that time frame. They lost two to Green Bay and one to Chicago. Okay, I mean, don't tell me that wasn't a good football team. It's a great football team. They just ran into the buzzsaw that was the Packers mainly.
Charles, when I was going to the Giants game starting in the early 60s, and I will tell you this as if it happened yesterday. As a kid, people always say, you know, you used to go to the Giants and Jets games. What do you remember the most about going to the Giants games? I said, well, I used to remember at halftime, you know, we had seats in the bleachers and we would always throw the Pixie football around and you would hope that it would come back to you. There would be like eight or nine of them flying around on the bleachers at Yankee Stadium. And the other thing I remembered every Sunday were the fans singing, bye, bye, Allie. Bye, bye, Allie. Bye, bye, Allie. We're sad to see you go.
Yeah.
All right. And then the next year, he'd be back coaching again and we'd be singing the same damn song every Sunday after they lost.
Hey, Grant, quick question.
Those
footballs, did they have the old logo of the giant guy coming out of the stadium with his arm extended, throwing, getting ready to pass? Remember that logo?
Yes, I sure
the
do.
The giant quarterback loomed over the stadium.
Wasn't that great? Yep.
That was great. And by the way, I've forgotten one of the all-time great connections, which is Bill Walsh, Joe Montana.
Oh, boy.
Sure, of course.
Yes. I mean, where you guys are, how could I not bring that up?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, Kenny Stabler and John Madden.
Tom
Flores and Jim Plunkett when they won
Super in the early 80s. Yeah.
But those are the ones. But I mean, Walsh, Montana can't get any better than that.
No.
But, you know, it's so funny. You know that iconic photo? How much time do you have, Grant?
Oh, we got 2 hours.
Okay. All right. Doug, you're going to love this one, okay?
Yes.
And I'm sure Mooch will not mind me telling this, all right? So.
I'm not sure because you started laughing, Charles.
Okay. You know that great photo of Walsh and Montana before the catch where he's down on a knee and Walsh is like they're drawing up something in the grass?
Mm-hmm.
You know that one, Grant?
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Okay. So this is a great one. So Mooch is coaching, and he's like, man, I need an iconic photo. I want one like that. So he's trying to figure out how he's going to do it, but he doesn't want to tell Steve Young he wants his photo. But he's got a guy trailing him. So he, like, calls timeout in the middle of a game, and Young's like, what? What's with the timeout? Come over here, Steve. Come over. And he takes a knee, waiting for Steve to come down. And the whole time, Steve's like, why did you take a timeout? What is wrong with you? He never got the photo.
Never, right? Oh, that's
never
classic.
Because Steve Young is like, what are we doing? We're rolling here, and you're taking time out? And so he never got it. He's like, yeah, okay, no problem, Steve. Steve's like, to this day, I think Steve's like, why did you take a time out?
That is beautiful. That is a classic. Oh,
how
my
great
gosh.
Is that? Mooch
that is
one
an absolute,
of my favorite people.
That is an
he
absolute classic.
He may punch me in the mouth if he hears about this.
Yeah.
But it's one of my favorite stories I've ever heard.
That's classic. That's actually almost as better as Mrs. Teammate. Not quite, but it's up
not
there.
Quite. Not
right.
quite. Not quite to that level.
That's correct.
But you know, it's pretty good.
That's a
stuff
classic.
Right there.
That is an absolute classic. So you got Cincinnati and Philadelphia this week, two teams. And boy, you know, Cincinnati, they had to win that Monday.
Who thought we'd be here with them right now?
You know what? Wow. When they lost the Monday night game to the Giants, I thought that was it. I thought that was a must-win game for them, and now you're looking at the spiral. And then, of course, you'll get a chance to talk to Marvin and see.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep on wondering, is this going to be it for Marvin Lewis? Is this going to be it? And he always comes back. And, listen, I don't have a crystal ball. I've heard, and I don't know if this is correct or not, that, you know, the ownership with the Bengals and the Brown family, you know, they're not the easiest people in the world to work for. Are you going to be able to get a real proven coach to come in and want that job? I don't have the answers to that, but Marvin Lewis at some point is not going to have a job.
Yeah, and it's look, it's the fact that it's the nature of the beast, right? Mm-hmm. There's two types of coaches. One's waiting to be hired and one's that will be fired. So it's just kind of how it goes. I think what they'll have to determine in that family now is has he gotten all he can out of this group? Because sometimes it just runs its course and there's almost nothing you can do about it. Because truthfully, the roster's not appreciably different than last year. Now, is it at key places? Yeah, look at the wide receiver spot. You lose Jones and Sanu, and now A.J. Green is hurt. Where's the speed? Who's going to run past anyone? Everyone now is pretty much a possession receiver. So Tyler Eifert, who was used to finding space because of the threat of Green over the top, all of a sudden, he's got to be Greg Olsen of the Panthers and maybe be the primary receiver. How will he handle that? This offensive line, which has been so good for so long, it lost Andre Smith at right tackle. Everyone else is back.
Yeah.
But it's not the same line. They're not run blocking as well. Andy Dalton's getting hit more. Why? You know, and I said, it's just one guy. And Marvin Lewis looked at me and said, you know, one guy can make a huge difference because other people have to do different things and all that. And some of that I would attribute to Coach Speak. But some of that is truly right on target.
Yeah.
It does. But here's my problem. You're 11, 12 games into the season. I don't know that you can really use that anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes.
Kind of like Josh Garnett with San Francisco. Why wasn't he starting early in the season? What Chip was talking about. Well, remember, he missed all the offseason, you know, a lot of because of Stanford's graduation and what have you. Okay, you can use that for a while. At a certain point, he's supposed to put in the time, right?
Time's up.
Now, well, he's been starting, he's been playing, but that's my point on the whole thing. It starts where, okay, I can live with it, but then after a while, well, we can't go with that. So what's going on with their offensive line? Because that's still the same group of people who are pretty darn good at what they do, but they're not doing it this year. So there's something different going on there. I'll see what else I can find out this week when we go in, but they'll be tested as pros this week because, truthfully, the playoffs, they shouldn't even be discussing that now.
No.
They should be discussing how to get a win.
No question.
And what happens from there.
So listen, Charles, next week what I'm going to do is I'm going to have my wife call up and try to recite the Potvin Sucks chant that she's going to hear on Saturday, okay?
Is that this Saturday
coming up? That's
coming
up this Saturday, 1 o'clock, baby, at the Garden. Yep.
Oh, that is so
classic.
Awesome.
Can't wait.
I'll be thinking about you guys. That is going to be so great. And I can't wait till all of us go because Doug's got to be in on this.
Absolutely.
I got to see it.
You got to do it.
We need some video, Grant. Come on, man.
It will be. Don't worry. You'll get it. Don't worry about it. You'll get it.
There we go, Charles. We'll be there. In spirit.
That's right. Charles.
I got to have that because I may put on my sweater on Saturday and do a little pot van. I'll put on my Brad Park sweater.
Number two, baby. Don't even get me started. I used to watch the Rangers when Boom Boom Jeffrey on was playing and Eddie Jockerman. And don't even get me started, Charles, because we'll never finish this segment. Hey, we'll talk about it next week. You have a very safe trip. You got the Bengals and the Eagles coming up the NFL on Fox. And we'll talk to you next week, buddy.
That sounds great. Great talking with you guys. Take care of yourself.
All right, you too. That's Charles Davis.